the worst moments of our life.
Hey, girl, hey, that's bad.
So speaking of, like, worst ever experiences.
That is the worst ever.
I don't feel so good.
And that was my worst audition ever.
How bad can it be?
And we feel the pain is best or funny.
Welcome to Worst
Ever Podcast.
Welcome to Worst Ever Podcast. Welcome to Christine.
What?
Welcome to Worst Ever Podcast.
Stop moving my microphone.
I'm just trying to ruin your life right now.
We are live.
Live.
From the Broadwater Plunge. This is a bar in Hollywood. It is connected to the Sacred Fools Theater. It is off Santa Monica Boulevard. So if you hear shaking in the background of cocktails.
If you hear a lot of loud actors.
They're rehearsing. They're warming up. Their voices.
Which rich witch wore which rich witch's wristwatch?
This is a very special live episode of Worst Ever Podcast.
Yes.
Because today we not only have making her comeback for the fourth time.
Well, I don't want to even say who it is yet.
Oh, okay.
Because I want to update you on what's going on with me.
Oh, okay.
If you don't mind.
Well, don't, yeah, all right. So they have to sit through this? What's happening?
Okay, so I quit smoking.
I heard. This is day...
18.
Wow. How long have you been, just remind our fans, how long have you been smoking?
Since I was 17, 18.
So 47 years.
No, F off. No, I've been smoking literally, I think since I was in high school. And then I quit for a year when I found out I had cancer, as one does. And so I quit. And then I went to the Middle East. And the first thing that my uncle takes me to is like a hookah lounge.
Oh, God.
Because it's just a normal thing there. You have your hot tea and hookah. And
then you're back on the train.
It triggered. I was like, I'm back. So the whole teeth episode has, I couldn't smoke for 3 days.
Right, because of
the
stitches.
So I was like, okay, this is it. If I can't smoke, then I'm just not doing it anymore.
How many days did you clutch your pack of cigarettes?
14 days. As like a stress ball.
Okay. And then after 14, you were like,
I threw it away, but I keep
these are
the
gross.
I keep the lighter. No, I just threw it away. Okay. But I keep the lighter as everything is security. So I do everything I did when I smoked, but I do it without smoking, right?
Are you doing anything? Are you doing a Juul? Are you doing a nicotine?
I have a Juul, but I don't like it, so I don't use it. I do the lozenges.
They have nicotine in them?
It's a nicotine lozenge.
Oh, okay.
It makes me choke and gag, so like it's slowly stopping, you know?
Gross.
But it's good, yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. But you did smoke pot once.
I did smoke the happy pot.
You're so not a pot smoker.
I hate pot.
You decided to just smoke the happy
pot
because why not?
I needed something to inhale. I was like, give me the happy pot. So I smoked the happy pot.
I had no idea. And then I was like, God, you're so happy today on the phone.
And I smoked the happy pot.
I think you should start smoking the happy pot more often.
I don't want to get involved. I don't want to get addicted to something else.
Okay. That's fair.
And I've been going to bars and drinking, and I've been doing my Starbucks.
You don't want to have any more addictions. Right. But that's good. Bars, drinking, Starbucks, but not smoking.
There's no smoking.
Okay, I'm very proud of you.
How are the kids?
The kids are good. The kids are not letting me sleep. This is day four or five.
You're such a complainer.
Listen to me. You call me incessantly. It's like you don't understand what
I haven't been smoking. I need someone to talk to.
I know. You're very needy.
I saw your Goldbergs.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. It was on Wednesday.
You directed really well.
Thank you.
I did have a few notes.
Oh, what were your notes?
Well,
I'm not in control of the final edit, by the way.
I know that. You got two passes, right?
I got two passes for my edit. And then, of course, you know, they have to edit for time.
I was really proud of you. In fact, I thought it was really good. It would have been better if you would have put me somewhere in the cast.
I tried.
But I, well.
You had to knock your teeth out so you couldn't audition.
I knocked my teeth out.
So that's what happens.
Our guest has no idea what's happening. All right, now you can introduce our guest.
Okay, thank you very much. Now that they've got updated on our boring lives.
Look at the time.
you guys are going to be so happy right now because our first guest, first of all, you're just like your fifth or sixth.
Fifth. Time on the show. I think it's my fifth.
She is our official legal correspondent.
Yes.
Miss Step by Step herself, Miss My Two Dads. Miss Stacey Keenan.
Stacey.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me. I love being on the show. I'm a big fan of the show. Listen to the show all the time. Every new episode shows up in the feed. Download it right away and listen to it. So I'm very excited to be back.
And speaking of dads.
Yes.
I mean, I don't even know where to begin with this one. I mean, Bobby Ewing.
Yep. Yeah, right?
I mean...
The man from Atlantis.
You brought that up. I don't remember that. All I remember is like Webb.
Don't say that in front of him.
Okay, sorry.
You were in a smoke-filled haze.
I know.
Frank Lambert, my dad, my TV dad. My other
dad.
My dad number two.
Yeah. Mr. Patrick Duffy.
Patrick Duffy.
And we're at his bar.
Thank you for having me here. I've never seen the podcast, never heard of it
before.
Well,
you don't see it.
I don't listen. You mean I dressed up for nothing?
Yeah. You don't see. We'll take a picture. Don't worry.
We'll take a picture.
I actually sleep in these clothes, so it's okay. I wear a cutaway to
breakfast. We'll make you an Instagram hero. Don't worry.
So we're at this amazing bar in Hollywood, and this is your bar that you co-own with your sons.
It's beautiful.
Son. Patrick owns the bar. Patrick and his wife jointly own the bar.
Okay.
I own the building that the bar is in, and they rent the space from me.
Got it.
So they actually own the bar. They own the license. They own everything. And they owe me just a shit pot of money.
That's great. I love that you can just keep making money on your kids.
Yeah, but I haven't seen a dime out of this, by the way.
But you're having a good time doing it.
And I think I'll be gone before any of it comes back.
But the best part is Christine and I did a one-act festival in this very room.
Yes, in this very room. This used to be like a little black box sort of theater. Yeah. And now it's this gorgeous, cool bar.
It's just full circle, kind of crazy. I mean, I literally got deja vu when I walked around the corner. I was like, wait a minute.
I know.
This is so weird.
Yeah, my wife and I bought the building 3 years ago. And renovated the four theaters. And then Patrick and his wife, when we were looking at this, to renovate this as a theater, they thought, we should build a bar. And that's how everything started.
Next time you're in Hollywood, folks, come by. It is super cool. It's got exposed brick walls and concrete floors, beautiful big wooden bar. And then, Patrick, tell us about the back of the bar.
Well, the whole thing, Patrick basically rebranded the entire theater. And the theater is now called the Broadwater LA.
Right.
The whole building is called the Broadwater LA, home of Sacred Fools. This is called the Broadwater Plunge. Very quickly, Broadwater was the county I was born in Montana.
Okay.
And the back bar pieces here were in my parents' bar when they bought it in 1952. But they came from a spa that was built in Montana in Broadwater County in 1865.
Oh,
and this picture is the spa. Somewhere in that spa, in what they called the natatorium, which was an indoor pool, mm-hmm. also called a plunge, they had a small bar, and those two pieces were in that bar. So the culmination of all of that, we decided to name the building the Broadwater, and named the bar the Broadwater Plunge.
How did you get it here?
Those came from Montana to my home in Tarzana, California in 1987. And then I took them up to the ranch where I now live in Oregon in 2001. And they stayed in the barn up there until Patrick decided to build a barn. I put them in a truck and drove them down.
Now, for those of you who are
any good dad does
listening, the pieces that we're talking about, it's the what's up against the wall holding all the bottles behind the bar. And it's this beautiful dark wood, and it's really tall, and it has these big, you know, impressive moldings around the top and this beautiful glass on both sides and mirrored, and it's just really cool looking. And then the natatorium, this picture is framed on the wall, and it looks like something out of
a prison.
It looks like the Grand Old Opry.
Yeah, it looks like if you had a movie with a sanatorium in it in Switzerland or something, that's what this building looks like. It's amazing.
They built grand things in that era.
They really did.
And
it's like a grand prison.
And for those of you with vision podcasting,
okay, go ahead.
I'll take pictures of all this. Put it on our Instagram.
This is a picture of my parents behind the bar in Montana, and those are the back bar pieces.
Oh, my gosh. This is amazing. It's black and white.
Oh, wow.
And the two of them are standing behind the bar, and there is that, I don't know, what do you call it?
It's called a back bar. Actually called a back bar.
There it is.
What you can see from this picture, in 1952, there was no such thing as a mixologist.
Right.
In my parents' bar, there was bourbon, there was vodka. Some people drank gin, not that many people, and beer. There's no bottles on the back bar. Every drink was a well drink, and there were only like three sections of that.
Wow.
And so now, of course, it looks like what a modern bar is with 48 versions of scotch and rye
stuff. I'm curious also, the liquor license, because they didn't have a liquor license
here. No, there was no liquor license. That was an epic saga.
I was like, how did you get in this day and age, in this city, to get a liquor license?
Right. In a building that was not originally licensed to sell alcohol. It was almost a two-year process. We literally had to start from going to local community gatherings here for neighbors and plead our case as to even put a bar in here.
Wow.
Then we had to go to the vice department of the Hollywood Police Department, and they had to do background checks. And they had to
walk. How did that work out, Patrick? Jeez.
I told them my name was Wilson.
I was going to say them.
Yeah. So they did that. Then they did a walkthrough. And they told us what we could do and what we couldn't do. They get to the point where they tell you where to put the security cameras, inside and outside, you know, for everything. And we passed everything eventually, all the way to going to downtown City Hall for the city council meeting when you're on the docket to be approved or not approved.
Wow.
And then it gets tabled for a month or two, and you're still waiting, and you're still waiting.
Did you speak at the city council meeting?
I didn't speak at the LA city council, but I spoke at the local community groups. Once it gets to city council, it's all procedural. It's now, all government stuff.
Do you think it helped? I mean, did people recognize you?
Or yes.
And do you think that helped?
I think it did once Yeah, what will I say? I think it helped once I wasn't Larry Hagman.
In other words,
there are different gradations of celebrity and why they want to do things, et cetera. And the fact that basically I was just here to help my son start a business, and I wasn't going to be a crazy actor, bar owner, you know.
Yeah.
I also have a reputation as a step-by-step dad and not a crazy, you know, how many times have you been arrested for a DUI kind of actor,
right.
You know. Although now when my hair is down, I do look like Nick Nolte's headshot.
I know. I was like, wait
I will
minute.
Say,
yeah, the mugshot.
You have a very impressive ponytail.
Yeah. It's deep Montana time now.
I know, you're like, full on.
The Broadwater theme is being carried through.
By the way, I mean, it's my first time meeting you, obviously. Yeah. I didn't realize how tall you were.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Patrick
so
is an
Suzanne
imposing
Summers
figure.
In comparison, was like, how tall was Suzanne?
I don't know.
5'7"?
Yeah,
and she was always wearing
seven.
Heels.
She was always wearing
heels.
So. And I was always wearing my flat shoes, I could. And I would always stand with my legs very wide apart when we would do over the shoulders.
Well, my question for you, Patrick, is, okay, your parents own bars. You grew up in Montana, right?
Let me correct you on one thing. Patrick now is a fifth-generation Duffy bar owner.
You guys like
this
to drink.
Is amazing.
Patrick now owns
How
this bar.
How dare you?
My sister and I owned the bar after my parents died in Montana. My parents, my father and mother took over the bar that her father owned in Montana.
Oh, wow.
And that would be my grandfather. And then my great-grandfather was the person who started the bar in Townsend, Montana, gave it to my grandfather, gave it to my dad. My dad's bar came to my sister and myself, and now Pedro owns a bar. So he's fifth generation bar owner.
Here's my Montana connection, just so you know. Political Allah went and campaigned. Well, it's true, Christine.
I know.
Went and campaigned for Quist. We lost, but.
Yeah.
And I held a vote goat and the whole bit. Like
it's a
in
vote
Montana.
Goat.
There was
what
a vote
that?
Goat.
Well,
it was like
good.
A vote. Yeah.
Good.
I've never.
What's a vote goat?
They bring this goat, this mini goat, to like get college students
Are
to help
serious?
Come. To attract the college. People love animals there. Montana.
It's
listen,
the weirdest thing I've ever heard.
It was a vote goat.
So stupid. Okay.
Yeah. I'd never been to Montana. I literally was landing and I go, where are the buildings?
So like, I've never been there. Is it super beautiful?
It's gorgeous.
It's wonderful. It's gorgeous. When I left there, in 61. We went to Seattle, and at that point, there were more people in the city of Seattle than the state of Montana. And Montana, at that point, was the fourth largest state in the union.
It's still, I think still population-wise, it's the same kind of.
Yeah.
My brother-in-law and sister-in-law live in Bozeman.
Okay.
Which is
I know Bozeman very,
very,
well.
Very beautiful, right next to Big Sky.
Yep.
You know, basically, they send us, our children are 3 days apart in age, our oldest children. And so I send them videos of her swimming in our hot tub, and they send me videos of their child.
Eating a buffalo.
And skiing in their backyard.
And killing a buffalo.
Full on cross-country skiing in their backyard.
So you went to Seattle in the 60s to pursue.
No, I went to Seattle in the 60s because my father was kicked out of Montana.
As one does.
What? Yeah. For what?
He had been pulled over so many times for drunk driving.
Oh.
And this was in an era when, you know, you could get pulled over a lot for it in a place like Montana because there are only four cars on the road at any given time.
I was going to say.
But
I mean,
eventually, and everybody knew everybody, so eventually the, whether it was State Patrol or Highway Patrol, whatever they were called, finally told him, Duffy, we're going to have to lock you up if we do this again. And they said, why don't you just leave the state for a year or two and let everything just cool down. So he packed up my mom, my sister, myself. They bought a 35-foot trailer house, hooked it up, drove it to Seattle, and began a new life in 1961.
Oh, my God. How old were you?
I was 13. 12.
Oh,
I was
but
12.
But Patrick has those deep Montana roots, hence how he became the gentleman kind of farmer that
you are.
Why
Seattle?
Well, because we had relatives in Seattle. Okay. My dad was a very good carpenter who I apprenticed with, and he got a job on the World's Fair. As a carpenter on the World's Fair, 1961.
I remember you telling us that.
So that's where I went to the last year of junior high school, I went to the University of Washington, met my wife. She made me move to New York.
She was an actor?
She was a ballerina.
Wow.
Yeah. So.
Did you act at all in Seattle?
Yeah, I did theater a lot in Seattle. And then I went to New York and was a waiter and a carpenter for 2 years, and then came to L.A. and was a waiter and a carpenter and a truck driver for 3 years. And then I was the man from Atlantis.
That was your first job?
Basically, yeah. I was building a boat in Long Beach when I actually got the network okay to be the man from Atlantis. So I put my tools in the car and went to
work.
So
wait, did you have an eight? Like, give me
how
that.
How did it work back then?
Yeah, give me that process. Is there, did someone discover you? Was there an audition? What like?
Well, the same way, it hasn't changed all that much. But what has changed is the ability of a smaller group of people to make major decisions. They're not committee-made decisions like they are now. They weren't then as much. I went to auditions. The 3 years I was here, I keep every date book. I have a day-by-date book all the way back to 1967, and I have every one of them. So when I came to L.A., I have every audition, go-see interview that I ever went on from the time I got to L.A., and there was a couple of years where I would do 100 to 175 different meetings, auditions, and go-sees in a single year and didn't get a single job.
Well, that's typical. Still.
Single job.
Yeah, yeah, right.
And so I was augmenting my wife's unemployment insurance as a dancer by being a carpenter and a truck driver. And I would go to auditions and call, and then one person, Ruth Comforti is a casting director, was at that time. I did a go-see with her, and she literally barely looked up from the desk, and I left my picture. And I had done a one-line part on a television show called Switch. And this lady, Ruth Comforti, she said later, she was balancing her checkbook on her kitchen table with the TV on. And she happened to look up as that one line. I walked across the stage and told Bob Wagner that the car was ready and then walked off. And she looked and said to herself, he didn't come across that way when he came into the office. I should call him back. So she called me back and we had an actual sit-down interview. And then I got called back and met the producer. And then I read for them. And then they kept liking me. And then I went back and did a screen test. And then I went back and met the network head. And the joke was, it was a superhero, the man from Atlantis. And when they saw me, I weighed 165 pounds or so, the network, and they saw me and they said, he's not an 8 o'clock hero.
Oh.
Who knew?
Burn.
They said, very Les Moonves of them.
And they said, he's a 10 o'clock hero. And the 10 o'clock hero being more cerebral, thoughty. Okay. 8 o'clock was more buff and everything.
Right.
So they put me on a regime of working out and high food intakes. And I still wasn't big enough. So our special effects man, Fred Phillips, who invented Spock's ears and did all the original Star Treks, built me a foam rubber body. And literally out of the same kind of foam that they'd put on makeup, sculpted it, shoulders, taped everything,
no way.
Constructed chest.
Every
and
day?
No. And then put on shirts and a thing. And they walked me over to NBC in the Valley from MGM Studios in Culver City to meet the head of programming. And I walked in and they saw me and they said, you know, he's been working out and really taking care of himself.
Oh, my God.
And they made me go out and sit in the lobby while they discussed it. And they came out and they said, we're going. We're good to go.
And then you're
got
like,
the job. And I had another month and a half to work out beef up.
Well, thank God no one lit a cigarette next to you because you would have like
couch fire.
So then once the show started, you didn't have all that stuff on anymore.
I had over a month to continue to work out and
kind of
buff
get
up.
To that point.
And then over the course of the show, I gained another like 10, 15 pounds.
Wow. But
I started out looking like a mime and ended up like something else.
How long did that go on? That
2 years.
2 years?
And you were
two
in
years.
The water with a seal. The whole time.
Well, not right? the whole time, but yeah, a seal and dolphins and freezing water because our union, and I agree with this 100%, just so all of you listening know, is when I worked with all these sea creatures or mammals, they have very strict rules as to water temperatures and how to take care of them. The Screen Actors Guild had no such rules.
Right.
So they decided I would have a pet, and it was a seal. And they built a underwater bed for me, which was just basically a big aquarium that I would hold my breath and sink to the bottom.
Oh my
and then
God.
This seal would swim around me. But it had to be, I think, 57 degrees or something
oh
in the water.
God.
And I was just freezing to death, except when the seal would take a piss. And oh, then wow. it would, for a moment, I was yeah. just going, oh,
thank you, seal.
Thank you.
Oh, my God.
Oh, no.
What now, didn't they make you learn how to breathe, like how to inhale
yeah,
water?
Yeah.
I remember that story.
No bubbles. That was the rule. No bubbles. If they saw a bubble, it was a retake. So I learned how to hold my breath. And then when I'd go underwater, I would breathe water up into my sinuses so that no bubbles would come out of my nose.
That sounds like a terrible job.
Terrible.
It was horrible, except that 7 days after it was canceled, I started Dallas.
Wow. Okay, that's where I want to go.
Oh wait, God, I just want to tell.
But this is where the 10 o'clock hero comes in. Somebody
yeah.
was kind of right about
Somebody
that.
Somebody was
I
right.
remember yeah. watching you on Dallas when I was a little kid because my mom watched it.
Obsessed.
And I would sneak out of bed and go sit. She would sit on the couch and smoke cigarettes and drink tea or coffee at 10 o'clock at night and then wonder why she couldn't sleep. And then I could never sleep.
This was the apartment in New York?
This was in the apartment in Pennsylvania, actually, okay. and then outside of Philly. And I would sneak out because I was a night owl like her. Like, I couldn't go. My mom was very chill. Like, our bedtime was 9 o'clock, even when I was super little, but I still couldn't sleep. I would be up until at least midnight. I'd be laying there for hours, so bored, like, oh, I'm just awake. And so, I mean, she was cool. I mean, if she would be like, all right, that's fine, get up, walk around. But other times I would sneak out and I would sit right next to her under the coffee table, and she'd be sitting on the couch right next to me. She either didn't know I was there or she pretended that she didn't see me. And I would just sit under there and watch Dallas with her for like an hour. And yeah. then and then I'd watch the news. And then probably after the news at like 11:30, I would sneak back in and go to bed.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a ritual in our household too. And I'm first generation American. My parents are Palestinian. At that time they barely spoke English, right?
Right.
But they loved fucking Dallas.
Yep.
Like, it was Dallas, not Slanding,
yep.
and
Falcon Crest.
Falcon Crest.
Yep.
Thank you.
Yep.
Obsessed. And like, all I remember all my cousins would get together in Houston. This was when my cousin was living in Houston, and we lived in Dallas at the time too. By the way, I've been to South Fork, and I'm so, like, my mouth's watering just thinking about Dallas right now. I'm obsessed. So I remember eating ramen noodles, and like, just all my cousins, we breed a lot, my family. So there's like lots of cousins.
So
you know
people.
All of them, from waffles to ham bones to the whole
thing.
Well,
bit. From listening to the show.
Right.
Yes, oh, okay. there's,
I'm in a big war. I'm in a war with my family right now.
Tam Tam.
Yeah, Tam Tams and the Wagyu beef. Anyway, so Patrick's like, what the fuck's happening?
We have names, code names.
I was going to say.
Little Debbie.
But how did this get to be not about me again?
Well, we're going to get to
Wait,
you.
Wait, we're still on you.
So,
you're not off the hook.
So when you... Because you, at some point, how many seasons before you decided to leave the show?
Seven. The end of my seventh season, I left.
Which was like, did you decide to come back, or was there a fan? Like, what happened?
A couple of things happened. I would like to say it was all me, but it wasn't all me. Although the ratings dropped, the fan base wanted to come back.
Because you were the good Ewing.
Most importantly, Hagman wanted me back.
He's such a... I've heard so many great stories about that.
Larry
man.
Hagman was my best friend from the day I shook his hand at the table reading when I met him the first day to the day I said goodbye to him when he died in bed when I was standing there. He was my best friend. So he didn't have fun and I wasn't having fun the year I was off the show. And at the same time I left, the executive producer who was the heart and soul of the quality control on Dallas also left, Leonard Katzman. So the combination by the network was, the show's going in the toilet. We need to solve it. And Larry said, well, first of all, get Patrick back. And then he called me. And this was before cell phones. So my light was blinking on my answer phone when my wife and I came into the kitchen. I played it, and it was Larry, and he was already in his cups, and he said, Patrick, I want you to come out to Malibu. Let's get drunk, take a jacuzzi. I want to talk to you.
Oh, my God. Like, that's a dream come true.
Yes, you do. Just, you know, your standard business meeting.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. And I turned it off, and I turned to my wife, and I said, they're going to ask me to come back on the show. And her first reaction at that moment was, there's no way you can go back on the show unless that last year was a dream.
I was going to say, story-wise, how did that work out? Because wasn't your character shot
the shower?
The shower.
Right.
But it was not because she said it, because Leonard had the same idea, mm-hmm. but it was true. That's how they solved the problem of me not coming back as an evil twin or
80s TV man. Yeah. You could get away with murder back then.
They just
then.
Said, boom, and it solved so many problems. It got rid of the storylines for a year that did not function well. It brought me back, and it brought Leonard back.
I've always, and you don't have to answer this, but I've always had the question, Sue Ellen.
Linda Gray, having lunch with her on Wednesday, yes.
Okay. Mm. Sweet, lovely.
My second best friend.
Okay. The girl who played the blonde, I forget her name.
Charlene Tilton.
Yes.
Shortest actress in Hollywood.
Yes.
Yeah. Wait, I thought, I thought Christine and I were the shortest actresses in Hollywood.
Oh, God, no. Probably. Charlene can't go on any rides at Disneyland.
Oh, stop.
So, as a whole, the cast was, you guys all got along. There was no.
Nope.
And you shot here in LA or in Dallas?
We shot, that was back in the day when we did a lot of episodes. For several years, we would do 35, 36 episodes a season.
Oh, my gosh.
So, we would shoot in Culver City at MGM Studios, and then go to Texas for 2 months out of every year and shoot exteriors. And that's how we did the seasons on Dallas.
And little known fact, wasn't Sasha Mitchell on the show?
Sasha was on the show.
Oh, you're kidding.
He was your nephew?
He was my nephew, Larry's illegitimate son.
I love the storyline.
Wait, wasn't he your nephew on Step by Step 2?
He was my nephew on Step by Step.
He just follows you around being your nephew.
Crazy. As a matter of fact, he's going to be here.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I was like, please. You left, but you personally made the choice to leave the show originally.
Yep. And then, I made the choice to die. I didn't think I was going to come back.
You created your own death?
Yeah, because Leonard said, well, how do you want to go out? And I said, I want to go out as a hero, and I don't want to trick the audience into thinking I'm coming back. So let's kill me heroically. And he went, okay, and that's how I did it.
And then you came back.
It's amazing.
I came back anyway.
It's amazing at that time how much say you had in your characters and where it went, yeah?
That was the only say I had. That was the only say Larry had. I mean, we did not control anything on that show other than what we did when the cameras rolled. We didn't make a single script suggestion. We could change dialogue to a great degree that you can't now.
Right.
Because it wasn't a writer's medium as it is writer-producer. It was executive-producer-actor medium. So if it didn't fit your mouth, you could change it as long as you didn't change the intent of the line or the scene. So that was flexible. But we didn't offer one suggestion for plots in, 13 years.
What were the hours like on that show?
Almost the same as Step by Step.
Meaning really? Minimal, right? Yeah.
Minimal hours on the show.
Really? On a one-hour drama?
If it was our one-hour drama, we would wrap by 5 o'clock every night.
What?
Yeah. We would get 13 pages a day.
How?
Easily.
You would use how many
just
cameras?
Pros.
That's huge.
One camera.
They're pros.
The yeah. only time That's we had insane. Two cameras is if we were doing a courtroom scene.
Wow.
So it was single camera, and we would just shoot and get everything for the day.
It's
every
like
actor
a soap
knew
opera,
their job.
That
yeah,
volume.
It was like a soap opera, mm-hmm. you know?
Wow,
it's
that's
very intense.
Crazy.
Yeah, and we started at a 7-day week, and then we went to a 6-day week per episode, and we got down to a 5-day week until the network said to the producer, to the Lorimar, that we're paying you a lot of money for 7 days.
Isn't that funny? And they do that.
Yeah.
So go ahead and work these 7
Leonard
days.
Leonard came to us and said, just stretch it out a little bit, because Larry and I were directing a lot of the episodes. Mm-hmm.
Oh, you were?
Yeah, I directed 30 of them. And Larry directed 20-some.
And you directed a lot of step-by-step episodes. And now the legacy continues. Lakin is a TV director, too.
Was that number one?
That was number one.
Aww.
Number one network job.
Network. Yeah, number one network job.
But that's so
okay,
cool.
I got my DGA card.
So then you decide
congratulations,
to come.
That's exciting.
You decide to come back. The shower scene happens. The dream. Right. Do they give you a bump in pay or what, dude?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the interesting thing is they did back up the money truck a little bit. But what happened was I got a bonus for coming back on the show, which was essentially my entire year's salary from the year that I wasn't on the show.
Yeah, TV is a good gig, and if you can get it.
And then renegotiated up as the returning person with Larry. So it was a good 5 years after that.
And then in 2000, when they rebooted it, were you part of that as a producer as well?
Larry and I produced one of the Dallas movies. It was the worst job of producing that you've ever seen in your life. And we both looked at each other and went, well, we have to admit it sometime. We're just sucky at this. We don't know how to do this very well at all. And so we didn't push for it ever. Yeah. There are people who are really good at that should do it. You know, I'm good at quality control, but I'm not good at minutia and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, and I trust my opinion, but no, there's the first director. I don't know if you had this. The first episode I directed on Dallas, I almost didn't get the first shot because I started and I would keep going and going. Oh, wait a second. Let's make sure this is over there. Okay, let's come back and they say, hold on a second. And finally, the DP took me aside and he said, Patrick, we're paying a lot of people a lot of money to do all these jobs.
Right.
Just tell the actors what you'd like them to do.
Right.
We'll work out the rest.
I was going to say, because nowadays, directors are so micromanaged already.
Especially on half hours and those kind of things.
I mean,
it's Video Village directing, basically.
Yeah. And you're talking to the actors a little bit, but at that point, if it's an established show, unless you're doing the pilot, everybody sort of knows their roles.
They've
they know
done
what
their
they're
homework.
Doing, and you kind of know what shots they're going to use.
Right, exactly.
It's a bit paint by numbers.
When is the last time the three of you have seen each other?
I think it was on Christine's show.
That we were all in the same room.
For Hollywood Darlings. Season one.
Yeah, we did an episode.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So they conned you into doing that?
both of us.
They sure as hell didn't pay you for doing it.
I know.
No.
But it was fun.
It was fun.
It was really fun.
Yeah, it was fun.
I do want to tell the fans, because people have been asking.
I know.
There's not going to be a season 3 of Hollywood Darlings,
no.
sadly. Not for any lack of love for the show by the network, but there's a lack of financing. unfortunately. And it's,
It doesn't mean it's the end.
I mean, they're trying to make a play somewhere, but it's always a bit difficult when
something's feel free to write in.
Write in. If you want to see it on Netflix or, you know, you want to see another season, then, you know, go for it, fans.
Right.
But it was sure a lot of fun. We had a good time. We're going to take a quick break for our sponsor, and we'll be right back. This episode of Worst Ever Podcast is sponsored by Care Of.
Care Of.
Care Of, people. Care Of is a monthly subscription vitamin service that delivers completely personalized vitamin and supplement packs right to your door. They give you a fun online quiz to ask you about your diet, your health goals, your lifestyle choices. It just takes 5 minutes to find out what vitamins and supplements you specifically need. It's really cool. And then a portion of every sale goes toward the Good Plus Foundation. This is really great. It provides expectant mothers in need with valuable prenatal vitamins. As a mom myself, I truly appreciate that. I still take my prenatal vitamins. Care Of's delicious nutrient-packed quick stick powders can also be added to your monthly delivery for an extra easy boost of whatever you need. So, how do you like it?
Well, I haven't gotten them yet, but I did the quiz, and they're coming.
So what did you find out that you need? Everything?
Well,
clearly need something for your eyes because you're wearing a monocle right now.
I put that in there. No, the quiz is interesting. Let me explain to you. So it asks you what you feel like you're deficient in. I actually did the quiz twice because I was lying to myself.
Okay.
So I did it again because I was like, you know what? I'm going to help myself. I'm going to get what I really need.
Yeah.
So there's a question is your hair thinning? And I was like, no. But I was like, it is kind of thin. I'm like, okay, so I need that. Do you need help resting at night? I was like, no, I sleep fine. You know, I was lying to myself the first time I took the quiz.
Yeah.
And then I redid it and I was like, screw it. So now I'm getting this whole, I can't wait to get it.
Oh my God. It's
because it's so easy. It's all pre-packed. It's ready to go.
I love being able to have just a packet of vitamins, you know, grab it, run out the door. I hate having to sort vitamins every day.
You know, I'm a grab it. Go kind of guy.
Yeah.
And I'm a set it, forget it kind of guy and a grab and go kind of guy.
Set it and forget it, people.
Anyway, I love Care Of. I can't wait to get my packets. It's so easy to use, by the way.
Well, for 25% off your first month of personalized Care Of vitamins, visit takecareof.com and enter promo code WORST at checkout.
It's not the worst, though. It's the best. But enter WORST.
back.
Hi.
Hi.
And we're back.
Okay, so it's been since you did the first episode of, first series, season of Hollywood Darlings.
Yes. Yeah, it's been since then.
Did you, just the three of you work together, or did they work with Jody? I didn't watch the first season of Hollywood Darlings, by the way.
Oh, my God.
How dare you?
Really?
What's
wrong with you?
How would you like your teeth to be missing
they're
again?
Already, they're
the
already,
nerve.
Already, like, you have no idea, Patrick. By the way, you can donate at GoFundMe.com/Alaa's New Grill.
He's trying to get people to donate to his teeth.
What
by
happened
way,
to the teeth? How did I miss this? I don't understand.
What episode did you miss?
I don't know. No, but just nutshell, what happened to the teeth?
I was carrying laundry up my stairs in Koreatown, which I'm moving, I'm packing up right now.
If your
now,
laundry's that hard, you should do it more often.
No, believe me, you have
Thank
no
you,
idea.
Thank you, Patrick. Yes. Voice of
and
reason.
There's
in this
like
whole
a
thing.
Lip on the staircase. There's like lips, like, you know, like that extend mm-hmm. a little bit, like a half inch.
Right.
And as I was carrying it, I tripped on the lip.
Drunk again. Mm-hmm.
Sober during the day, right after
Allegedly.
The View. Right after The View and Wendy Williams.
I don't know about
and
that.
And I, yeah.
In other words,
I time my
drunk
laundry.
Again.
Yeah.
So, it's 9 a.m. somewhere. Right. Allah.
So I landed on the banister and knocked this tooth out, this one right here, and the second one was popping out. So I had to get two more.
Are you kidding?
This.
You're
no.
pointing to your bottom teeth right
yes.
now.
Yes.
That's a new, the, just as of 18 days ago.
Yeah.
That's a new grill.
This is
like
something people have nightmares about.
No, not
about.
Yet. I still have stitches underneath. This is just a partial.
Jesus it looks really
Christ.
Good.
It
it's
does
a good
look
one.
Good.
Yeah.
It really
very,
is.
Like,
but
yeah.
you're straight.
Yeah.
You're going to get an implant.
I'm getting a bridge in the front.
Holy.
It's a
this
whole
is,
thing.
Because
I have bone
right?
loss.
Many people have your worst nightmares. Oh,
I have bone
loss.
Yeah, I have bone loss. So I can't. So they did a bone graft. So that's all still healing. I get the stitches out Friday. I come back from my trip to Florida and Louisiana. And then I'll come and start the bridge and then implants and the whole bit.
How much money are you up to with your fund?
I've only raised $245. Okay. I'm so insulted.
Actually,
well,
I think that's pretty good.
I think that's, surprisingly
high. I'm asking
high
for $27,000.
Wait, that's what it's going to cost?
Well, if I want to just do a whole new mouth in the on the bottom, I mean, I'm going to go for gold. I'm not, like, messing around here. Stacey, what
just continue to grow your mustache till we can't see it.
Yeah, that sounds actually more.
Yeah, 27,000, but I'll be happy with like 6 to 10,000.
Oh, okay.
Please donate at GoFundMe.com/Alaa's New Grill.
All right, let's
okay, that's enough about you. Back to me.
Yes.
So Dallas.
So Dallas, and then did you act in between? What happened in between Dallas and Step by Step?
Step by Step started 14 days after Dallas was canceled.
You and
oh
you and
God.
Like your weeks apart of jobs.
In 23 years, I had 3 weeks off.
It's unbelievable.
Offers or auditions?
I didn't audition for Dallas. I was just given it, and I was given Step.
You were given Dallas because of your Aquaman or whatever that was.
I was given. I was given
Man from
Dallas.
Atlanta. Yeah. Aquaman, same thing.
I mean, I auditioned for Aquaman, Man from Atlantis, but the. Next door to where I was filming Man from Atlantis at MGM, Leonard Katzman was producing Logan's Run.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Remember that? And
yeah.
And they got canceled before Atlantis got canceled, and Leonard was old school, and he walked over. He was already given the assignment of producing Dallas, and he walked over and talked to my crew on Atlantis to see what kind of a person I was. What, was I a team player? Did I come in on time? Was I responsible, et cetera, et cetera? And
yeah, they've been. He's been swimming with a seal
with
that
insists
all the
he's
time.
He's not
a
suspect,
yeah.
But he's always here. And so literally the offer came in to my agent to play the part of Bobby on Dallas.
That's
and
awesome.
And I just took it.
Was this, let me go back, was this the same agent you had since you had first got
yes,
to L.A.?
I got this agent in New York. I did an off-Broadway play. She came to see an actress in the play and saw me and signed me. And then I literally did not earn her a dime for almost 4 years. And
oh,
she
wow.
kept me the whole time.
That's
Boy, was
great.
That was a smart move
so,
on her part.
Yep.
But was was Dallas shot as a pilot or already picked up series?
Dallas was shot as a 5-hour pilot.
Like a miniseries.
That doesn't happen anymore. No.
No, that doesn't happen anymore.
And
either.
Did the original cast stay from the...
Yep.
Everyone's... There was
Every
no...
single person. Well, there was one person, but they were intended to leave the show. They came back on Knott's Landing. That's how Knott's Landing got
right.
sold to CBS. It was a spinoff of Dallas because of Gary Ewing, who was my brother. But it was a different actor. Ted Shackelford played Gary Ewing on Knott's Landing, and it was a different actor on the original 5-episode of Dallas.
Wow.
So when you were offered Step by Step, did you know that Suzanne was
Suzanne,
going to be the wife?
Suzanne had her part first. They were looking for a Frank, a husband. She was already signed for it.
Did you already know her at that time when you heard it was her?
She had done a show called She's the Sheriff.
Yeah, I watched that.
At MGM. And I would see her on the lot, but I didn't even say hello to her because I knew who she was from Three's Company, and I was smitten and
as
shy.
She was an icon at that. I mean, she was like a boy's fantasy. Yeah.
So they hired her, and then Leonard Katzman, who was friends with Tom Miller.
Yeah. Who was the producer of Step by Step.
Told Tom, you know, one of the Dallas guys should really do your show. And they said, Larry wants to do a sitcom? And he said, no. Patrick wants to do a sitcom. And Bill Bickley said...
Also a producer.
Producer said, Patrick Duffy's not funny.
But he is funny, that's the thing.
And so they sent the gag reels from all the years of Dallas over to Bill Bickley.
That's amazing.
And
that's
when they said... I was going to ask you, how did you transition to the comedy?
We did comedy on Dallas, except the moments the camera rolled.
Right.
I bet. Right. Between you and Larry Hagman, I'm sure it was ridiculous.
So that's how we had fun. And then I went right to work on Step by Step.
So were you excited when you found out that Suzanne was already...
Oh, yeah. I loved the fact of doing it. I was scared to death. I've never done a half hour before. But I've always been very protected. When I did Atlantis, Belinda Montgomery was my co-star. She played the scientist who took care of the Aquaman guy. And she'd been on television forever. And I'd never done television, essentially.
Yeah.
And I would look to her during the first, you know, few months of, is this okay? Am I doing all right? And she would, you know, you're doing fine. Do you think? Suzanne did the same thing. Suzanne did the same thing. I was doing a comedy. I had no idea even how a comedy was done. I didn't even know how the three cameras worked. And so when I got on the show, I would always look at Suzanne those first couple of episodes in studios, remember? And I would look over and she would give me the, you're doing fine. You're doing
how much
right.
say did you guys have, you and Suzanne, like in the casting of the children?
I had no, do you think they'd be here if I had a say in
that? I'm questioning.
Like, we snuck in under the radar, believe me.
Because, I mean.
They all worked more than any of us anyway. They all knew who they were going to be. I mean, we didn't have any. I had no idea who my family was going to be until I met them on the set.
Now, were you bummed out when you heard there's going to be this raft of kids? There's going to be like 6 kids on this show?
No, I think that cliche of don't work with kids and dogs didn't mean anything to me. You know, I thought it was going to be fun. You know,
we were wanted children. Yeah. Turns out.
And this now I can say because it's enough time has passed. But we had the most talented, well-behaved group of young actors on our show.
Except for one of you, and you know who you are.
Yes.
No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. I'm right here. You can't say that. But, Suzanne and I we never would go to our rooms very much. We'd sit like a couple of old nattered aunts in our chairs by the set. And we would talk about how fortunate we were for the working situation that we had with this many young people and the kind of plots we would have that were very strange and weird and over the top sometimes. And, you know, Carlin, my wife and I will say this in different forms of to this day, I hear my wife saying, Stacey Keenan is probably the greatest American actress at her age I have ever seen.
Oh, wow.
What?
And allegedly.
No, one of the biggest losses in our industry was when Miss Keenan decided to enter law.
Well, she's not. We've talked about it on the podcast. If there's a reboot, she is not saying no.
Yeah.
But I have the idea.
We can figure it out.
I have the idea for the reboot, and you guys might think I'm sick and disgusting.
Let's hear it. Okay, and then Patrick will be in charge of getting Suzanne on board. Patrick can get that done. He's probably the only one.
No, here's
you're directing. You pulled
back. No, Frank. Frank, actually, you're the star.
Thank you.
But here's the plot, and it's I'm bringing it to like this generation. I'm bringing it to like a more of an adult. It's kind of dirty.
Okay.
It's stepdaughter by stepfather. So Suzanne and him get divorced. He marries his stepdaughter.
No.
you, Stacey Keenan.
This is terrible.
It's like a Woody Allen kind of thing.
No,
it's
like a Woody Allen. We are like real parent and children here.
I know, but like, you're not
that is a bizarre concept.
Like, Christine was his daughter, and you were his stepdaughter.
No.
But you guys fall in love, like Woody Allen, like a whole Woody Allen.
That is not,
that's terrible.
That's worst pitch I've ever heard.
We have a lot of resemblance to a real family. So what you're saying right now is shocking and horrible.
I'm telling you, like,
I just threw up in my mouth.
Yeah, a little bit.
I'm just saying. That's what the audience wants to see these days.
No, they don't.
Then you hang around with
no
a really suspect
no,
group of
don't.
People.
No, they don't. They like the family
yes,
nature of the show.
Guys, he's still on pain meds. Don't listen to him.
Yeah, he's high as hell. No. Frank is there, and now, you know, the kids are back, and they have their own kids, and, you know, and maybe somehow it's one of these situations where it's a multi-generations living in the same house together.
That's what I always have felt like JT would still be in a basement. It's like Cody was in a band. JT would still be in
someone's basement.
He works
at a video, the last video store.
The last video store on Earth.
He maybe owns and runs that establishment.
Did you direct any of the episodes?
50 of them. I did 50 episodes of Step.
So to go from having never done a sitcom, being a star of a sitcom, and then directing a sitcom.
And it was three or four camera. It was three camera.
And acting with Patrick was great too, because you didn't really have to hit your mark. He would just kind of incredible Hulk-like, just sort of like lift you up. He is very big and strong, as you've already pointed out. And he would just kind of like very subtly kind of like lift you with these like big ham hands of his and just kind of like place you on your mark. And you're just like,
that's why we wrapped early.
Yeah.
Is because I didn't have to do take two if Fumble Butt here would miss her mark. I'd just go put her on her mark.
He knew how to do it so he could just take that out in the edit. He would just like, boom, just put you down right on your mark.
When the original network was CBS or ABC?
ABC.
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 When they canceled and then you guys, like, that acquisition, how does that work?
Les Moonves made it work.
I mean,
no,
well,
Les,
they were trying
Les
to.
Moonves made it work. I mean, that's.
Was he with Julie Chen Moonves at the time?
No. He was, for whatever is going on at the present moment, Les was one of the last people whose real enthusiasm was the magic of making film. That's all he wanted to do, is just do. He was so excited about television and the process and the actual genetic makeup of the industry. He was not. He turned out to be quite a businessman. Obviously, CBS has been number one forever, but that enthusiasm is why he picked up the show for the last season. He liked it, and he liked us. You know, and I had done Dallas for CBS, and I had known Les all this time, and you know, all the people at the Miller Boyette company knew Les as well as any of the other network execs, and he just said, "This show can still make money, we can still do this," and so he said, "I'll pick it up for another year." Now the problem was, at the end of that year, we dropped the last, I think, three episodes of the season.
Yeah, we
and that was
about
the
that.
Tragedy. That was supposed to be the wedding.
Was that
we had been
wedding.
Planning that wedding, like
well,
a real wedding for months.
There could be a wedding where you marry your stepfather.
Okay.
That is not how the show works. That's it is a family show.
It's, you know, my the worst son's, ever podcast,
My
guys,
son's
remember.
Wife is an actress, you know, a beautiful actress, and she's 44 years old, as my son is. And I know in my mind, if there was ever a script and they said, "Will you do this part?" And I read and went, "Oh my God, she's going to play my girlfriend or whatever." I said, "No, I have to turn down." That's just the ickiest thing I can think of in the world.
Yeah, she's for those of you who don't know her, she's like a Suzanne type.
She's a
tall,
beautiful
bombshell.
Yeah, yeah.
Blonde.
But no, that's it. And it's so funny. Not that, you know, I'm going to be 70. I don't know how old Stacey is, but she's not 70. But
yeah, we don't need to talk about
but,
how old I am.
In a lot of circumstances,
there,
those age ranges mean nothing. But when it comes to the situation that you develop as a family, it is the most abhorrent thought process to even consider. You couldn't do it.
Because Patrick was really like our dad. I mean, I still remember me and you and Angie kind of gathering around Patrick when he was in the makeup chair, and he still has these very rugged eyebrows.
You would name my eyebrows.
And he, being the rugged Montana man that he is, he would not let any, you know, fancified makeup artist hairstylist trim his eyebrows. And he's like, no, I'm not a metro
pull them
sexual.
Down.
I'm a Montana man. Like, these eyebrows are staying as they are. So we would have these couple of hairs that would be really long, whiskery hairs. And we named them. There was like Alejandro.
Yeah, yes, right.
And like Alfonso.
And Stacey would come over and just pull one line. Go, oh.
And we'd go all the way down to almost like his cheek.
Right.
And we'd be like, you have got to trim your eyebrows.
Right. So we would all just come gather around him and be like, what's going on with this? Can we just do something? And he would have these three little like gnats gathered around just being like, what about this? What about these eyebrows? And he's like, nope, they're not going anywhere. No, Alfonso and Alejandro
and
are staying
in place.
And
you develop a parental care. Suzanne and I had, and not like daddy and mommy, but we felt responsible for the well-being of the young people on the show, even how they were treated by producers and things like that. And you know, that was our safe place. When you come on the set, that's your safe place. And you should be you should feel free to do anything that you think is in support of the concept of the show. And then they can subtly tell you not to. But you don't yell at young actors. You don't berate them. You don't, you know, do your producer thing. And Suzanne and I were very adamant about, you know, the fun sense that a set should have, especially when you're doing comedy and especially with young people.
And I can't tell you, every time someone asks me, what was it like being on a sitcom? What was it like working on that show? And they always ask, what were Suzanne and Patrick like? And I say, the show was amazing. I had a wonderful experience as a child, and it was because of the two of them.
It's true.
It's so true. It trickles
they
down
set
from the
tone.
Top.
You and Suzanne set the tone.
100%. And as,
so
you know, throughout the years, I've done a lot of other stuff where that is not the case. And it's so interesting, especially as an adult, you walk on a set, and man, you can smell it from the moment you walk on.
The tension is
that
so
that it is not
thick.
A happy
house. Oh, yeah,
happy
no.
House.
Right.
So
happy. Did you tell
so
Patrick
places.
That we had the one of the original kids?
We had Jarrett Lennon.
Did you?
On the podcast.
The original?
Yes.
He's still on every show.
I know. He
talked
about
it. We talked about it.
He's the one that gets out of the car and you see his legs run.
And for many years, he was actually still in when they used the footage from Magic Mountain before we like reshot it, I think in season 4 or 5. You could actually still see a bit of his face. He got paid for 4 years, got a residual.
Really?
Nice.
For every time
there you go.
His
very
face
nice.
Would show, yeah. Yeah, he's a really interesting guy and a really nice, really
yeah,
nice guy.
Yeah, he very
not
nice.
Not the business.
The whole story, but the whole story behind his getting let go and the whole bit was so.
And showing up at the party and not knowing. There was some network party. I remember that party. It was at the same gated community on Mulholland where Michael Jordan lived.
Yeah, and it was Michael Jordan came.
And Michael Jordan walked into that party. It was in LA. Look, if you don't live in LA, maybe you don't realize this, but in LA, no one reacts to celebrities. It's like everyone is too cool. I don't care who it is. Somebody walks in and everyone's just like, meh, meh, whatever. No. The only exception to that I've ever seen is seeing Mike Tyson at Whole Foods. He brought the place to a complete grinding halt.
That's
it
a very odd place
just,
to see him, too.
Right? It was just after he had gotten the tattoos on his face.
Well, the
and
fact
he is,
that he's shopping at Whole Foods.
Well, and he's such a physical presence.
Oh, yeah.
He's so unpredictable. You just can't help but just stare at him. You just don't know what he's going to do. And he's so big and imposing, and the place was at a standstill. Everyone was just staring at him. And the other time was when Michael Jordan walked into this network party, and people just lost their minds. Like, first of all, he's a foot taller than everyone else, and everyone was just out of their minds, like staring at him. In LA, an athlete can stop traffic, but not the most famous actor in the world is not going to do it. I don't care if Clooney walks in here right now. It's like, nah, yeah, whatever. But Mike Tyson walks in. Different story.
In all seriousness, if someone approached us and said, hey, I do have a great idea, unlike Alas, I have a great idea for a reboot.
Unlike Alas, that idea is rejected out of hand.
I mean, we'll
Stacey said that she would figure it out with her lawyering schedule. Would you want to? Or are you kind of like, I have a bar, I have a ranch.
No, that's not the point.
I have a salmon river.
I have a salmon river.
That is a multi-layered question. You asked, would I want to? Yes, I would want to. But I would need to have the question why answered.
Sure.
And the question why is a very difficult question because the why has to do with the very kernel of doing a sitcom, especially resurrecting a sitcom, because the whys generally are, but there's a ready-made audience and it'll be successful. That's not the why.
No.
The why has to be inherent in the writing and the premise of the show, and I can't think of a why, and I'm pretty good at thinking whys.
Well, could the Brinks truck be a why?
Could the what?
The money truck.
The Brinks truck?
Up. Yeah.
Well, but those are the whys that most people resort to, and I understand that. The other whys that I say, sure, I would want to, is to work with everybody again, except a couple, and you know who you are.
That would be the reason for me.
You know,
it's just to be with everybody
the same
again.
Amount of people. I don't foresee it happening.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, I would say, cute ideas that you could say, oh, but then, and then there's the problem with the fact that they now have kids and the parents are the grandparents, and the, you know, that's not the why.
That's why the why for me is modernizing it and doing stepdaughter by stepfather.
It's disgusting. No. So weird. Stop saying that. Okay, let's get on to your art collection.
Yes.
Which you just did a big sale, yeah?
Yep.
So just for anyone who doesn't know, Patrick is a major collector of American art, a major collector to the point where he had to build a special, basically a museum on his property to house this massive collection. And I remember you saying all the way back in the day that if your wife was ever tempted to buy jewelry or something, you would go, okay, but what would you rather have? Do you want this piece of jewelry or do you want some art? And then the two of you would be like, we want the art.
We want the art. Yeah.
It's a beautiful room. I want to see it in person before you. No, why did you just?
We'll have a reunion.
Oh, I'd love that.
Up at the ranch.
Apparently, Stacy wants to shoot quail now.
Boars. Wild boars.
You want to what?
Shoot wild boars?
We talked about this a lot.
Yeah,
we talked about this on the podcast.
No.
Is he high? We talked about this on the previous episode.
He might be on the happy pot.
I didn't realize that you like...
She's a vegetarian, but now she said the only time she would be interested in shooting
something
would
be
with you. So... Now she's back. She's,
you know, and there, she, the you know, there's more wild boars in this world than there are Priuses.
Yeah, right? They're rampant. They're an invasive species. They damage crops.
I told
they damage
my
other
sister,
native
I told
species.
You my sister totaled her car from a wild boar. Yep.
No, you didn't.
What?
Oh, she was driving from Tampa to Orlando, and on the I-4 corridor, apparently at night, a wild boar ran on the freeway. And she killed the boar, and it totaled her car.
See, like this is where we come in, Patrick. We come in, we dispose of the wild boar, and then we make amazing artisanal prosciutto.
There's the why.
You and me.
Yes.
We just hunt
and Christine
boar at night.
Because you've fallen in love. And
No, it's a father-daughter hunting trip. And then
perfect.
Maybe Patrick's sons, and everyone comes in. Like, I bring my husband, Christine brings her husband, and then Patrick and Connor show up with their wives, and then we all go on this
big
family.
Or you make it like step-by-step meets Lord of the Flies, and you're stuck on, like, you know... Which would be kind of like I'm trying to make
these bitches are just getting worse.
There's no edge to any reboot. Okay. The reboot does not have an edge. It is a.
Do you live here full time, part time?
I'm still an Oregon resident, but when my wife died 18 months ago, I've spent most of my time down here so far because I had essentially retired. "Quote unquote," not really, but
not after this reboot.
This will be. But I've been down here. Predominantly, most of the time, I'm going home for Christmas for 3 weeks, that kind of thing.
And you've got grandbabies now.
And I have 4 grandchildren and my 2 sons and their wives, and everybody's happy. So I'm down. And the bar took a lot of time to you know, get
you're
up
also,
and running.
You just did a, is it a recurring role on American Wife, or is it?
It's not recurring unless they ask me again.
But you play lead's father, right?
I play her father.
And you have the ponytail on
And I
on
have the
show?
Ponytail. Oh, I went into the reading with the ponytail. They didn't know I had a ponytail, and I thought, I wonder what they're going to say about this because I'm not going to cut it for a one-off. And I walked in and then I got the rewrites and they wrote to it.
I love it.
They wrote 2 jokes for
how it. How was that? I haven't seen the show yet, so I can't speak to it, but how is it?
It was wonderful. I mean, it's good. A lot of, it is a 3 camera, but it's now they're 4 cameras basically.
Right.
4 camera, by committee type of sitcom. It is a writer's medium, you know, and but it was fun to do. I love working. It's just so much fun to, it's so thrilling to drive on a set, to drive on a lot. Yeah, I drive on a lot, and I'd never worked at the CBS Radford lot, and I drove on it.
My favorite lot.
And
it's a good one.
I'm
passing, cozy and cuddly.
Yeah, it is. It's just the best ever. And there's the Gunsmoke Street, and you're going, Gunsmoke Street. And there used to be a lagoon there, but there's not a lagoon now. But there's the lagoon building.
Right.
But I know that what was the lagoon, and so you know, I pulled in. There was a parking place for me that wasn't written on masking tape. That was good.
Was it actually like in plastic? Like,
yes. I almost stole it, but I thought, how cheesy would that be? It was so much fun. It's just so much fun.
How was the
work.
Crafty, more importantly?
The Crafty was great.
That's all I judge a
Dallas
show
Crafty was basically some Doritos.
And vodka?
At a certain time every night, yes.
Listen, I worked with Barbra Streisand for a year, and our crafty, literally, and we make fun of it today because she makes so much money, and I love you so much, Barbra, but was beef jerky and M&Ms.
There you go.
And I was happening right now?
Do you remember our crafty on staff?
Oh, Inger.
Yes, Inger. How,
one word, Inger. Inger. Inger was from Norway. She was the
name was Anger?
No, Inger. I-N-G-E-R. It's almost like Ingrid.
And if you saw her, you could visualize a hat with horns.
With horns. Yeah. She was so Norwegian.
She looked like a Valkyrie. Yeah.
And she would, cook, and it was this whole thing.
Soups every day.
And there's just a huge, thing all the time. And we were very skinny at that.
She would always make me, she'd make you anything you wanted. And yeah. I do remember as a kid, she was just like making me grilled cheese sandwiches and salads and
yes, but we were very skinny at the time. Despite all that.
A real one.
Oh, Patrick's drinking, guys. What would you
all
order,
right,
Patrick,
here we go.
Huh? Stoneface.
It's time for Daddy's medicine.
Stoneface. Daddy needs medicine.
Daddy needs
his medicine. It's time.
Okay, I want to ask you about when you are in L.A.,
yes,
your place here,
yes,
did you have to evacuate?
I had to pack my car.
Okay.
I didn't evacuate.
I'm talking about the fires.
Right.
Terrifying.
We had the big fires.
Is it still the place?
I'm in the Palisades.
Yeah. Okay.
And I'm up in high up in the mountains in the Palisades. And the night of the biggest part of the fire, it looked like sunset, gorgeous, beautiful sunset, but it was 9:30 at night, and the sun had been down for 3 hours.
Oh, wow.
It was frighteningly beautiful and so scary.
Apocalyptic.
And, that was on a Friday, and they said we could get the signal to evacuate, voluntary evacuation, not mandatory. But I thought, well, I could wake up in the middle of the night with the sirens going and probably grab a blender and a sock and wonder what the hell was I thinking when I finally got out of danger. So I spent the entire Saturday going through the condo, selecting, picking, and I packed the car to the gunnels. And the sad thing is that I could get everything that was important to me in one car.
That's actually, I think that's a good thing.
But I think it was a good thing. It was a good thing. It makes you realize and qualify what things mean to you. So, and then the next day, then Monday, I had to go on American Housewife.
Oh, wow.
So I thought, well, I can't leave the car full of shit in the garage and have it burn up if there's a fire and I'm not there. So I drove this car. I looked like one of those homeless people
the
that live in their car.
You were in quarters.
I really was. Everything was just like this. I was driving hunched over with my car full of shit.
Actually, that was a joke from the Step by Step pilot, by the way.
Right.
Pretty good literate joke there about, when you all pull up, we're like, I'm standing there with the arms crossed like, oh, look, it's the Jodes.
It's the Jodes.
Grapes of Wrath, people.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you had the best lines, I think, in the entire series.
Oh, for sure.
It was Stacey's show.
It was Stacey's show.
No, wait a minute. So we didn't hear about the art collection. We started on it, but then we never...
So none of that was here in L.A.? You didn't take that out?
There was a lot of it. The gentleman at the bar, his name's Peter Kloman. He's the American representative for Sotheby's, American art collection here.
And, is he here to give you a check?
Uh-huh. No, I got that already. But when I decided to sell the art collection, it was part and parcel to the realization that when my wife died a year and a half ago, I realized how much had not been taken care of. That because I knew in my mind how to take care of everything, but it wasn't taken care of. And I thought, if I were to get hit by a bus, or if Wile E. Coyote dropped a piano on me when I walk out the building, there is so much undone business in my life. So I looked at everything. And I thought, my wife and I bought this art collection over almost 40 years, and we literally called every piece of art a CD we're hanging on the wall.
Uh-huh.
Oh.
Now, I did research. We only bought things we loved. We bought things of value that had good resale value based on historical perspectives.
And sorry, will you tell everyone what is the focus? Because you focused on American artists.
I focused
on
American
period.
Artists. Basically, from the beginning of the 19th century through about 1957, I think, was about the last one. The only living artists that we had were Andrew Wyeth. So we had several Wyeths.
Wow.
And
By the way, Stacey, in addition to being a lawyer, was also an art history major.
Oh, that's so.
Correct.
Yeah, so I'm a super snooty art snob.
Snooty art snob.
100%.
So when I decided to sell it and I got a hold of Sotheby's, they came first to the condo and looked at what was there, which was only about a dozen pieces.
Only a dozen, folks.
And then they went
there's
up to
the... There's a few wives thrown in, whatever.
They came up to the ranch and that's where I had... We tallied 44 pieces in the Sotheby's auction by the
you
time we did
all
it.
All paintings or sculptures as well?
Some sculptures, but I only have... I only have one remaining American sculptor. That I kept for myself.
Speaking of sculptures, this above the bar?
That's a bust of me.
That is a bust of you.
Yes, it is.
I was like, I thought it was, and I wanted to make sure, because I was like, yeah.
Is that in bronze?
Well, it looks like it's in bronze.
It does.
I did a TV show in Canada 25 years ago where I played a vampire, and part of the plot was he made bronze sculptures of himself and gave them to opera houses all over the world. And
then
at a single moment, they would all emit a sound that would call Draculas from all over the universe to invade the world. And I was the head Dracula. So that was me.
And they gave you the bust.
They made half a dozen of them, so I got them all.
Folks,
my God.
Secret, really fun side benefit of being an actor is that you get ridiculous stuff like that. Like, I have a 6 foot long and 4 foot wide nude painting of myself.
That's beautiful.
Actually, from
Step
by Step.
Wait a minute, the marriage of Frank and
no. I'm like, wait a minute.
Right,
what?
Step by Step is a family show, right?
But
there was an episode.
An episode.
Where I agreed to pose nude for like an
a
art professor at college.
Was this our show?
Yeah, and she said it was going to be
abstract. Of the one where you did the film, and it was going to be a questionable film.
Right, yeah,
and
exactly.
Frank had to come in and say, yeah, right.
Yeah, so it was supposed to be abstract, so I agreed to pose for it, and then she like unveils it at some, you know, the big, you know, auction or whatever, and it's not abstract at all. And so they had me pose in a bathing suit, and they painted it like a nude picture. And I have this, how the hell do you have like, a nude painting
where is
of yourself?
It?
It's hanging on the ceiling.
I don't
in my little
I don't
reading
remember
nook,
seeing
my little,
that when we went to the house.
My house. I showed you.
That is so funny.
So
when,
it's ridiculous.
Where we recorded at her coffee table in there, if you there's like a weird little nook on the side that's got... books, and that's probably where the ghosts hang out too. And you go through like the curtains almost. And
oh my God.
She's put it very
Christmas
strategically,
very strategically on the ceiling because it's like, where do you, what do you do with something like that? But I think on a ceiling, it's like an Easter egg. You're in there, and then also,
oh my
you're like,
God,
whoa,
why don't we sell your all your art and fund the reboot of Step by Step, Daughter by Stepfather?
No, well, okay. Not your reboot. Thank
so,
you.
I mean, Patrick is a fancy art collector. Just everyone get on board with this.
Yeah,
I remember him being at like table readings and being like, hold on, folks, I need to answer this. It's my agent, my representative or whatever at this auction. And, you know, the paddles are going up right now. I got to answer this. I got to authorize
well, I was
the next
ask you,
bid.
Is
it was like, whoa.
Did you do an auction for the artwork or did you do a...
We did two auctions. There were too many pieces for one auction. So we did an auction in May and one in November.
And then
in New York.
There's a really good... If you're interested, there's a...
This is fascinating.
I thought it was a really good article. The Hollywood Reporter did a really good article on that.
On the auction?
On everything about him and his art, like, you know, and the sales. And everything. It's a really good article.
And Sotheby's came, and this is why I love this company, is they came up to the ranch. They brought a film crew in from New York. They did a complete documentary on my life with Carlin, the ranch.
That's awesome.
The art auction, everything about it. And then they played that for months before the auction all over the world.
Really smart. Getting the word out there, the excitement.
And it was such a beautiful video. It wasn't just, and here's this, and here's that, and here's that. They did the story that they felt was the driving force behind why we started the art collection in the first place, our relationship.
Did your art have any kind of Banksy moment where it imploded during one of the sales?
No, but the highlight was we had a Milton Avery that went very, very well in the auction.
So it was all sold individually. It wasn't sold in
it was all individual.
Now, so who were these buyers? Did you have museums? Was it international people?
You never
Is
know.
It private collectors? You never know.
You never know.
You never find out.
People that are
you
buying
never find out.
For
like I'm picturing like Chinese business people.
And they are.
And you know museums in New York City.
I'm
and
picturing
probably
some crazy
in the
step
West
by step.
Wyeth is
huge
in China.
It's so American. Yeah. It's the most American. Right. And people will pay, people who've never been to a museum in their life will buy a ticket to go see Wyeth.
Yep.
It's the most American thing you can possibly think right. of. If you're listening now, if you're not familiar with Andrew Wyeth, look it up. And yep. it's America.
It's America because his father was also a renowned artist who did almost all of the pictures that you would recognize from Captain's Courageous, Treasure Island, all of those paintings of depicting those stories in the very early 1900s were Andrew Wyeth's father, N.C. Wyeth. And then Andrew Wyeth is his son. And then Jamie Wyeth is a very famous painter now, who is Andrew Wyeth's son.
Oh,
so
wow.
It's a
Do you paint?
I toyed at it. I toy at it over time. But I do it as a conceit, the same way I do almost everything I do. So
nothing that you do, actually. You know.
So anyway, but the auction was very successful. And the reason we did it is I wanted to make sure that I zeroed out every penny of debt that I owe in the world. Which I did. So, you know, we had investment properties in Oregon. I still have them, but we leveraged them over time. You know, we take one and then borrow on that one, mm-hmm. do another one. And they support the nut of my entire life. But I wanted to zero out all of those mortgages. So we sold the art collection. I am now free and clear. And
so
falls,
yeah.
the boys
so
just
when it
go
was
to
gone,
the bank.
And now what's in that room?
Building. It's a whole building, right?
I only sold the American side of the art.
All right. Calm down, everyone.
Okay.
The American.
Just the American.
You don't have to have a
collection.
Bake sale for me just yet.
Okay.
You know, the GoFundMe page is not going to...
So wait, I know you collected other...
Yeah.
I thought it was all American.
No, I mean, a lot of it is, I would say, not totally museum-worthy, but I have... What I really love is I have five original Nelson Mandela pastels.
Wow.
That I got in South Africa when we took a trip there.
It's one of my favorite places in the world.
Yeah.
Mine too, actually.
And a couple of sculptures. 12 of the 44 pieces didn't sell for what I wanted as the reserve on them, so I have those back. Mm. So they're hanging. And I have some other foreign art, you know, non-American.
I feel like there's a docuseries stuff. Here waiting to, like,
Yeah, right.
Art
with Patrick.
Yeah,
maybe it's like one of those cooking travel shows. It's like Somebody Feed Phil, but instead of traveling and eating,
it's
Patrick
and
traveling and looking at art and maybe buying art, maybe selling art.
What I was
art.
Able to do with Sotheby's is they asked me, and Peter, who's up at the bar now, I'm wondering why I'm not drinking with him, but they asked me, I went to Portland, Maine, because Sotheby's was having a business conferencey thing there. And so I went, and we had an hour... open mic session of discussion of art collecting.
Wow.
And not from the perspective of somebody who knows a lot about art, but about the passion of following that mm-hmm. passion in art collecting and the satisfaction of it.
Well, that's one thing I liked about the Hollywood Reporter articles, that it talks about how you did all your research, but it wasn't just the research. It was visually what you were attracted to that came first. That was the first attraction.
It always has to be something that talks to you.
Right.
It has to speak to you.
Do you think, knowing that, like, if there was something that came up for auction that you were like, ooh, that's a pretty one. Like, do you still have the bug to buy?
Oh, I still have the bug. Yeah. I still have the bug to buy. I got to get another step by step, though.
Well.
No, you don't breed hunting dogs anymore, right?
No, I have a few labs still up at the ranch, but
see,
I don't.
People, this is why I say Patrick is a gentleman farmer, right? He has his salmon river, and he was, anyway, a hunter and a fisherman.
You have a pilot's license
and
while
a carpenter and an art collector, and he breeds these hunting dogs. I mean, this is a rare breed.
Yeah.
Well, if anything, we should do a special... A step-by-step
special. I don't
know
about we, but I want you guys to come up to the ranch.
Well, I'm saying we need to arrange this family, like, fishing, or hunting event.
You just concentrate on your
you
team.
Can do, you can do a GoFundMe for your own airplane ticket.
Yeah, there
ticket.
You go.
I'll do my own airplane ticket. I know where, you know how many miles I got?
So I want to tell the listeners, you have this amazing career that goes on and on and on for years and still continues
Lucky
to bring
guy.
You back.
Yep.
And then you have these two lovely sons. And they're both sort of in the business.
Yeah,
now.
They are. Yep.
And I mean, you have Pedrick, who owns this, you know, great. He works at this this amazing theater company, and
which is rare in LA, by the way.
Yeah,
to have a really good theater company that is makes
smaller,
money or and does shows and creates and creates.
Renowned.
They pay their rent.
Yeah, it's hard here. Right. I know what theater is like here, and it's like almost non-existent.
And Pedrick is a brilliant playwright who I unfortunately have saddled with a bar that he's going to have to really dedicate his life to for another year or so. And then he will find people to do some of the 24-hour-a-day responsibilities that he's doing right now, and he can get back to writing.
Right.
And Connor, my other son, is he and I have a project at Warner Brothers. He's got another project with a playwright that he's doing, married to a very successful writer-producer of half-hour comedies. And they're both wonderful. They each have two children. They each have a boy and a girl. So, you know,
life is good.
Did you ever think your kids would follow in the footsteps?
We had hoped. Both Carlin and I hoped. Especially Carlin, from the very beginning. I had always had a more laissez-faire attitude about work and that I was more lucky than good. But Carlin looked at the arts as sacred. And that
she was a ballerina.
And an actress and a model and all those things. And when both boys, even in like grade school, would do things, she said she could see what the future was for them. And that her rule was that art took precedence over anything. We were actually going to do a boat trip. I was going to take all the kids, all the grandkids, on a floating boat trip through the south of France, one of those barge trips.
Right.
And when all of the things were made and the money was all in there and everything, the lady who was arranging it all said, "Do you want trip insurance?" And I said, "How much is it?" She told me, and I went, "I don't think so. I'll get back to you on that." And I went in the living room at the ranch, and I said, "Oh, honey, they're asking about trip insurance on this, and we're going to go. No, don't worry." She said, "No, you need trip insurance." I said, "Why?" She said, "Because if anybody gets offered a job, we have to cancel." I said, "No, we don't have to." She said, "Well, you don't have to cancel, but if anybody gets offered a job, I'm not going." So I said, "Okay, I'll get trip insurance." And, you know, the foresight of her was that she died right after that. And it was all, you know, because of her that everything took precedence over your passions. And that was the lesson that she left me with.
Smart woman.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yep. That's crazy because, you know, I look at my kids and, man, if they could do anything else, I would love it.
Yeah.
If they could be accountants, I would love it.
You say that now, Christine. You don't know.
I must tell you, we have just spent the last hour plus talking about how fortunate our lives were to be
correct.
In the situations that we were in.
True,
I want true. Nothing more for my children than to experience the kind of joy that I had working with you guys, working with Hagman, working on Atlantis, doing plays for no money.
Yeah.
If that's the satisfaction that they leave this world with, as opposed to, I punched the clock and got my retirement, my 401k, I guess I'm okay. I would rather them...
And unfortunately, I have to say, the way that the economy and the school systems are now and everything, it's the first thing to go. It's like gone. Like the arts are gone. Like, you know, it's like kind of... They should be so fortunate to have a parent who has been so evolved in the arts and can teach them. Because there might be an opportunity where they don't get that you're going to be able to give them. And your husband's a great actor and a theater guy. And
Look,
you know,
never going to deny them. If that's what they want to do, I'm always going
to
help them.
Because I'm taking them
journey.
To the auditions.
Well,
I am going to be that stage
guy. Because
Mama
doesn't want to be running around this town.
No.
You know, he and I met in an acting class.
Yeah.
Really?
When I was 15 years old.
Yeah.
That's...
Wow.
Why he's in my life, and I can't get him out.
I've birthed both her children.
Yeah, but do you know that I'm strong enough to lift her and a pig at the same time?
That's true.
Apparently.
That's true. Correct. So
and put her on the mark.
Right on the mark.
All right.
I do want to wrap this up so that you can go talk to your Sotheby's friend, and we can continue drinking.
Yeah. By the way, let's just give another plug to this place real quick.
Broadwater Plunge, people.
Santa Monica Boulevard at Lillian's.
Even if you're visiting from...
One block west of Vine.
Another country, and you come to Los Angeles. Stop
Do
by.
It.
Stop by the Broadwater Plunge.
Yep. You never know who's going to be here.
Correct.
And the drinks are really
By the
wonderful.
Way, who's your bartender? Because he's a mixologist like and he's amazing.
This is Damien today. We have five different bartenders in rotation. On busy nights, there's always two. But yeah. And oh, and the other thing is the on the bar, the our drinks are named after people that came into my parents' bar in Montana when I grew up in the bar. So the Owl Bar side of the menu is all named after. We have one called Stubblefield's Mule because Stubblefield was an actual person who every once in a while would bring his mule into the bar.
Stop. Patrick has framed black and white photos that he has that he's handing us now, and literally here is this guy, and
it's
he
not
looks
a vote
like kind
goat,
of a.
But it is a mule.
It's a mule. It is Montana people.
It is a mule standing at the bar.
Yeah. Oh my God!
Is he drinking a cocktail through a straw? This mule?
They put one in front of him. I'm not sure he drank, but I also have pictures of.
Well,
my
thank God it's not today because the straws are illegal.
My sister and I.
Oh right.
Sitting on
LA
that
people,
mule in the
straws.
Bar.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Wow.
We have a drink called the Swede, and the Swede was my dad's best friend who basically helped him, you know, with carpentry stuff and taught me how to drive a truck when I was 8 years old. And we
have
a picture of the Swede. There's the Swede sitting at the bar. That was the only picture I had of him.
Oh, wow. This is a black and white photo. It's... I don't know how to describe this. You
can
sort of
abstract. Shot right down the bar through a bar glass.
Right.
And that was Swede, and I never knew his last name.
And this is the Swede in the back,
yep.
right? There's another guy kind of leaning his chin on his hand right before him.
Yep.
That's great.
And I think that's Speed Simons. And then this is the patron of the bar. This is my wife, Carlin.
Yes.
And her picture is always in the library shelf in the center of the bar.
That's a great photo of her.
And that was taken at the opening of the theater when we bought the building.
Awesome. Wearing a beautiful long dress.
We had the opening party in the black box next door.
She must have been so proud to see this place come together.
Well,
she was the theater.
She was the one who said, "Yeah, we should buy it when it came up for sale," and we did. And she was starting to research decorations for the bar when she passed. She wasn't here for the opening or for the the culmination of everything, but yeah, she's kind of hovering.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's an honor and a pleasure, I have to tell you.
It is.
Thank
you so much.
The last
thing I want to ask you is that I have so many funny memories just like of the stuff that happened behind the scenes of Step by Step. And we had, I feel like, I didn't see the Dallas gag reels, which I'm sure are epic, but I feel like we had some pretty funny gag reels. I almost want them to get released someday.
And for everyone who's out there, what the gag reels are
Jim and Karen. Please, Jim and Karen have VHS copies of every single episode.
Did you transfer them?
The gag reels were for the cast party at the end of every season. And so the editor and whoever else would put these gag reels together, and then it would play for the, and everyone would see it together for the first time at the cast party at the end of the wrap party at the end of the year. And it was hilarious. And then because we worked for such a nice organization, they would give people copies of this.
Right.
So that's how, but
awesome.
Anyway, that's what the gag reel is.
So
and
you
it's
have all of them, Christine.
I have them all. Yeah.
So, and they've been transferred?
My dad transferred. You know,
well, you have to send them. You have to send them to Patrick.
Yeah, you have to go.
My dad would be happy to.
You can play them at the bar and sign them.
One of my favorite things that you used to do all the time, amongst many things.
The nose bump?
There's that.
Jesus,
it was also anytime
Patrick.
He had like
on just on cue. Anytime
he'd have a scene with Suzanne. Our show was a family show, but it was also quite like they'd be in bed together,
a lot.
Yeah. And Suzanne would always have some
negligee on.
Like, who is this woman in Wisconsin
like
that's wearing a negligee?
You guys, she created the Thighmaster. Are you kidding? Of course they're gonna use.
Yeah,
they're gonna
course.
Use her
so
assets.
Like, we have Suzanne frickin' Summers. We're putting her in a damn negligee right now.
So she's in the bed, and like there would always be like some moment to like break the ice, and she'd be like, what the fuck is that? And he would have like an egg beater in the bed or like some kind of, kitchen utensil, just like some random thing that he would then just like pull out.
They wouldn't let us use any of that. I don't know why.
I know. Yeah. It was great.
Did you talk to her, Suzanne?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
She's in Palm Springs, I think. Yeah.
Palm Springs and Malibu, back and forth. Back and forth, yeah.
Their house was also a bit under duress.
And they sold their original house in Palm Springs and now have a different place.
Right.
Mm.
Yeah. But I love her. And again, she was, when I left Dallas, finally, when the show was canceled, I thought I'll never have a working situation like I had with Hagman again. I mean, working with your best friend, I would get to the set early every day. I'd get a half hour early just so I could, well, first of all, Larry and I would go in his room, open a bottle of champagne at 7 in the morning.
Champagne, I'm telling you. That's, how did I know?
And that's genius.
7 a.m. somewhere.
7 a.m. somewhere. So when that was over, I thought, I'll never have that feeling again. And I walked into the first day with Suzanne, and I looked at her and I went, oh, my God, it's my new Larry Hagman. And she was my new best friend, you know, for those 7 years and since then. But, it, you know, I've been very fortunate to work with people that I love dearly, present company included.
You're welcome.
Well, at least this side of the table. But, yeah.
Well, Patrick already hates me. It's been an hour.
It's not a difficult task.
So, I'm so glad as a father that you both turned out so well.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, thank you so much, you guys, for both being back on the show.
And you want to let the fans know that this will be the last show during the holidays,
So we're going to take a little break for the holidays. We'll be back in January. Enjoy. Everybody have a very merry Kwanzaa, Christmas.
Holiday,
and not Hanukkah.
Nothing. Sponsors, if you're listening to this, I never heard of Bauble Bar until I heard the ad on your show. And I have bought so many things from there. I'm on it constantly buying things. Well, I don't know if you had a code at that point, but it works out there, sponsors.
Right
These ads reach the people who will buy
And right now,
products.
You should try the Care Of.
I'm wearing Bauble Bar earrings and necklace as we speak because of this podcast. I'm just saying, this is sales on the ground.
You should probably try the Care Of.
Do it. Yes, get those
vitamins.
All right, well, thanks for listening. I'm Christine Lakin. You can find me on all social at Yo Lakin.
I'm Alec Callan, and you can find me at Alec. Don't ask, Patrick. Just don't ask.
I'm Patrick Duffy, and you can find me in the bar.
Yeah, do you have any kind of social media? Are you doing that?
I have nothing.
Jesus.
I've dropped off the face of the earth.
Yeah. Well, you're a lawyer.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, how'd your last case go? You said it was kind of crazy.
It went really well. It was crazy because the defendant was representing herself.
Ooh, I love those.
So we did this
trial.
Why
didn't you tell me so I could have shown up?
We talked about this before. The courts are open. They're open
to
the public.
I want to watch that one.
It was interesting. She was an older woman in a wheelchair representing herself. She was in custody, and then meaning she's in jail still at the time, and then there's me, and we do this case together. So it was very weird.
Did you win?
Well, I don't want to call it winning.
Okay.
My job as a prosecutor is to seek justice. Right. I believe that she
Thank
was
you,
guilty of...
Did you beat her with a sack full of pennies or no?
The jury came to what I believe is a just verdict. They did convict her on 2 of the 3 counts, which, by the way, included animal cruelty, so that meant a lot to me. Ooh. She tried to poison her landlord's dog. She gave the landlord's
allegedly.
Dog... the jury found her guilty. They convicted her.
And I like to say the word.
Okay. All right. But yeah, she fed the landlord's dog a ton of Benadryl to try to kill the landlord because she was mad at the landlord. So that meant a lot to me. I really wanted a conviction on that count because she did it. She admitted she did it on video. There was no question.
Yeah.
You know, the dog almost died. The dog suffered a lot. So they convicted her of that count and assault with a deadly weapon because she then threatened the landlord and his girlfriend with a knife and a cleaver, a huge butcher knife and a cleaver.
Oh, my God.
Hell, so, even I can outrun a wheelchair.
Well, the wheelchair itself was in dispute.
Oh, okay.
In court, she had a wheelchair. On the videotape, she was jumping around like Muhammad Ali.
So it was
I think, a bit of an act. So, it took 8 days. It was a very long trial.
Wow.
You know, the vet who treated the dog had to come in and testify about the treatment, you know, emergency treatment of the dog. And, you know, it was a production, but it came out good. And, just result.
Good for you.
Very proud of you.
Good for you. Let's go kill some boars.
Let's do it.
Thanks for listening. You can find us at Worst Ever Podcast and Worst Ever PC on Twitter.
Buy some merch.
Buy some merch at worstEverPodcast.com.
Go fund my teeth.
Do not fund Alaa's teeth.
Yes, do fund my teeth. GoFundMe.com/ Alaa's New Grill.
All right. Or buy a hat and, you know, give it to your loved ones. Rob, as always, thank you for being here.
Yes.
And definitely check out the Broad Bar Plunge when you're in Hollywood.
I need another one of these cocktails.
All right, let's go get one. Yeah. Broadwater Plunge. What did I say? Broad Bar?
Yeah.
I just want to get to the bar.
She's drunk.
Broadwater.
No, she's
bye.
Bye.